The Earl's Revenge, written by Barbara Cartland, narrated by Anthony Wren. Chapter 1, 1819. Charles Lyndon was driving his high flyer Phaeton. He thought his team of four horses were the best he had ever handled. This build of Phaeton was becoming most popular with the young bucks of St. James's, and he had proudly owned his since his return from the army of occupation in France. It was an immensely high vehicle that was extremely difficult to drive, particularly with four horses. The rear wheels were an unbelievable 5 feet 8 inches in diameter, and the floor of the body was 5 feet from the ground. He considered it the most sporting vehicle any gentleman could possess. Sleek and beautiful, it lent itself to racing and required skill and daring to drive. Alongside that, there was always the chance of an accident, which might prove fatal. This element of additional danger added a certain thrill which most young bloods found even more alluring. It was not just the gentleman who admired the highflyer. The vehicle's great height made it possible for the fashionable ladies of society to gaze insolently down on pedestrians. Charles Lyndon never felt the need to look down on anyone, but he was very conscious of his own importance and position. He was undoubtedly, since his return from the war, the most handsome, the most sought after, and the smartest buck of all the bucks in White's Club. He had, in fact, taken London by storm. Returning from France with two of the most prestigious medals for gallantry the Duke of Wellington could award, he was also the youngest ever commander of a large body of troops in the British army. The Duke had praised him so highly to the Prince Regent that he was now a constant visitor to Carlton House. In addition, he was extremely rich, not only because his father had left him a large fortune, but also because his mother had been a great heiress. To crown it all, he was heir presumptive to his uncle, the Earl of Lindenmore, who had been ill for some years, but still managed to reach the age of 65. In short, Charles Lyndon was an eligible young man with good prospects. All of Charles's friends admired and imitated him, but there were, of course, a few men who were envious and jealous. They were especially jealous of his success amongst the most fashionable beauties in society, usually referred to as the beau monde, French for beautiful world. They called him the never-never peer. Charles managed to laugh at this, but at the same time the sobriquet annoyed him. He had enjoyed a year of endless gaiety and festivity in London after his return from France. It was not only the sophisticated married and widowed ladies who would fling themselves into his arms, but he was also pursued by every ambitious mother with a debutante daughter. The Cyprians, a group of courtesans named for Aphrodite, and renowned for their beauty, were at the height of their fame. Not permitted to attend the balls given by society, these mistresses to the wealthy organized their own glamorous events. So it was not surprising that Charles had successfully courted the most beautiful, the most talented, and most sought after of them all. In fact, his life had become almost too perfect and easy. At times he found himself secretly bored and longing for more excitement and the unexpected, as had occurred at war. It was this more than anything that made him decide, as he was nearing 28, that it was time he was married. He owned one of the finest houses in England. Lyndon Hall, in the county of Berkshire, had been in the family since the 17th century. The old house had been pulled down, and while a new mansion was being built, the Earl of Lyndenmore had moved to Northumberland, where he found better fishing and grouse shooting than anywhere else in the country. He had therefore given over the family house to his brother, Charles's father. Charles had been brought up at Lyndon Hall, and he loved it more than any other place in the world. The rebuilding of the mansion had been carried out by the greatest architect of the time, Robert Adam. His genius belonged to the school of architectural thought that sprang from the Italian Renaissance. With its virtues of formality and dignity, this had produced a great number of British historic houses and buildings over the preceding years. However, Robert Adam was a modern architect.